This is CliffCentral.com.
Yes. It's Liquido with Play Some Rock. When last did you hear that?
Oh, I've forgotten about that song. It's so nice. Look at you, rock star.
See?
It was in you all along.
Yes, I know. I try. All right, it is Tuesday. We're into the middle of February, the 12th of Feb today. It's 2 days until Valentine's Day. If that matters to you and you've got important things that you have to prove to your lover, you've got 2 days to get it right. So yeah, grab your credit card and go out and buy some things.
It's also getting darker.
Let's not talk about that. We'll just pretend that isn't happening. Hey, Stefan, what's up?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Cool, man. What's going on?
Well, I just want to tell you guys, you are the light of my afternoons.
Oh.
I'm actually a teacher in China.
Oh, so you listen to us, what, on the way home, or what do you do?
Well, we're in the middle of Spring Festival at the moment, so we're on holiday at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So usually I listen to you guys during lunch.
Right.
Today I'm just at home, cleaning up a bit with the supermarket now.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely -2 weather.
Oh, where in China are you?
I'm in Shijiazhuang in the Hebei province.
I'll pretend I know where that is.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, of course. Lovely place. Yes. Marvelous.
We're about 2 hours from Beijing.
How's your Mandarin?
What, the instrument?
Okay, it doesn't sound very good. Yeah, it sounds very patchy.
I speak it a bit. It's very patchy. I know enough to be dangerous.
All right. Well, that's cool. How long are you there for?
Well, I've been here now almost a year. I'm actually coming home in April to get married.
Oh, congratulations.
And then I'm coming back.
And what do you do there? What's your job?
I'm an English teacher.
Okay. So a lot of South Africans have done this. Is the money good? Is it interesting work? Do you get to travel? I mean, what's the chup here? Because I wouldn't want to go and teach. I wouldn't even teach my nephews English.
Well, point one is you're speaking to a class of people that don't understand the language you are speaking.
Yeah.
And you need to teach them that language.
Wow. That's
Secondly, traveling is, I mean, I take off whenever I want to take off. Because the money is so good that a week's unpaid leave is nothing for me.
Wow, it's that good, huh?
Like
if you were in South Africa and you were teaching English, you'd never earn that kind of money.
No, I mean, if I convert it to Rand, I'm earning about 40,000 Rand at the moment.
Good Lord, a month?
For 20 teaching hours a week.
That's amazing. Holy shit. Okay, good work for you, dude. Well done. What's the worst thing and what's the best thing about China?
Well, the worst thing is people spitting everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Their hygiene standards are not
Different.
Up to scratch.
They're different, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. They do. They hawk like that, and then they spit wherever they are. Yeah, I got you. All right.
Yes.
And the good thing.
Very friendly people. They always try to help. Even though if they don't understand you don't understand them, they will always try and help you. I'm safe here. I'm walking in the streets with my cell phone out in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
I was just counting money now. And I do this in the middle of the night sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
It's safe. I don't feel threatened here. I don't have to look over my shoulder.
Yeah.
I leave my door open some nights.
Beautiful. All right, dude. Well, listen, thank you. It's nice to hear from you. I appreciate your call because, you know, if we didn't know that people were listening, it would feel a bit stupid to do this every day. So I appreciate it. Thanks.
Well, I can tell you we're at least 5 people in my city that listen to you daily.
Okay. Out of a population of billions, that's very, that's really, it makes me feel good. All right. Thanks, dude.
Okay.
Bye,
thanks, Gareth.
Cheers. All right, so
it's gotta
I promise.
Be tough.
Do you think so? Tough earning that kind of money?
No, the way he said, "We're his lifeline" type thing. Losing that connection with your country must be hard.
Oh yes, no, sure. So I want Sia to have some input in this because I've been talking about this for a while. So ultimately, and this is not meant to depress you; it's meant to make you feel good. ultimately, you are not going to exist at all, not in anyone's memory. There will be no trace of you. Everything will be burnt up and incinerated. There will be nothing. In a couple of million years, no one
will. Oh, I thought you meant like by Wednesday. Oh, panicking there.
Like,
you
maybe
look,
that's a news
you
report.
You look so calm. My hands are sweating.
So, no, this is a long way off.
Okay, Phil.
But ultimately, no one in the universe who's looking for evidence that we ever existed will find any one day. Any. They might find a scrap in outer space and go, I wonder where that came from. But the Earth isn't going to last forever.
And so we've been documenting stuff and keeping records. You have a history podcast, but none of that's going to matter.
I mean, we let a USB float into outer space. Maybe someone finds it and finds how to read it, but it's highly unlikely. I mean, most of everything that's on the Earth will eventually go. Everything. The oceans will be boiled away. The whole thing will be scorched. It's just not like the ultimate story of humanity is not a good one.
Oh, no. Mm.
So you're busy amassing your gold, or you're building your dream house.
Dreaming of being a rock star.
Yeah, or you're writing a book or what. It's all going to go. So this should release you from that feeling like, oh, I'm not doing enough.
My life is meaningless. In a weird way, it relieves the pressure.
Yeah.
Relieves the pressure, but okay.
There are scientists who are extrapolating the future of Earth, the biological and geological future of the Earth, based on the estimated effects of several long-term influences. So first of all, over time intervals of hundreds of million years, random celestial events start to pose a risk to the biosphere. That the biosphere is all the living stuff on the planet's surface, right? So among these things are comets and asteroids. We know that's what took out the dinosaurs. So those could happen. The possibility of a massive stellar explosion called a supernova within 100 light year radius of the sun, because even in 100 light years from the sun, if one of those stars explodes, it will destroy the Earth.
Oh my word.
All right, so that could happen. There are theories about glacial periods. This is what the geologists will tell you about how many glacial periods the Earth has survived. But if one of them was severe enough, it could destroy all life on Earth. Of course, the Earth will still be here for a while, but you know, there are little things like eccentricity and axial tilt and the precession of the Earth around the sun. And these are perturbances that happen in the Earth's movements.
Perturbances?
Yeah.
What are those?
Perturbance is a disturbance. It's like a slight wobble on the Earth's normal trajectory. Anyway, so these things could happen. But the luminosity of the sun will steadily increase. This we know for sure, resulting in a rise in the solar radiation reaching the Earth. This will result in a higher rate of weathering of silicate minerals, which will cause a decrease in the level of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere.
Sure, I think I need to get a better sunblock.
Yeah. In 600 million years from now, which is not that long.
Oh, excuse me?
600 million years. It's really not that long.
No go.
It's not.
How long has it been since dinosaurs?
About the same amount of time. No, maybe a third of that time.
So 200 million years ago, there were dinosaurs.
Yes.
So you're saying 600 million isn't
that long? It's not that long. In the scheme of things, I mean, the Earth's 4.5 billion years old. So it's not that much.
Yeah, okay. Have a party.
Anyway, so in 600 million years, the level of carbon dioxide will fall below the level needed to sustain carbon fixation photosynthesis. So plants will just die out. And the extinction of plants will be the demise of all life on Earth, since plants are the base of the food chain. There might be some bacteria that survive. And
I love bacteria.
Okay, so in about a billion years, the solar luminosity will be 10% higher than at present. This will cause the atmosphere to become a moist greenhouse, resulting in a runaway evaporation of the oceans. As a likely consequence, plate tectonics will come to an end, and with them the whole carbon cycle. Following this, in about 2 to 3 billion years, the planet's magnetic dynamo will stop, causing the magnetosphere to decay, leading to accelerated loss of all gases through the atmosphere. 4 billion years from now, the increase in the Earth's surface temperature will cause a runaway greenhouse effect, heating the surface enough to melt it. Everything
and hence the Earth became flat.
Everything that humans have built will be just subsumed into this molten stuff on the surface, right? It'll melt.
You know, if you played this stuff over a loudspeaker in a psychiatric ward, there would be suicides.
So, by that point, all life on Earth will be extinct, even the bacteria. The most probable fate of the planet is to be absorbed by the sun in about 7.5 billion years, after our sun has entered the red giant phase and expanded beyond the planet's current orbit. So eventually, after all these shit things have happened to the Earth,
all of the shit,
then the sun itself will grow so big and so hot and so large that it'll just subsume us into its surface. We'll just melt into the sun.
And if there is life on other planets, and they won't survive that.
By the way, there's nothing we can do. Our home.
No stopping this.
If you got in a time machine and you went ahead 7 million years, no evidence that there was ever a planet Earth.
So why am I not using plastic straws anymore? What is the point?
No, wait.
This is my whole thing with all these people who want to save the Earth. You can't even save yourself.
Gareth, nothing at all?
Nothing, Sia. Isn't that great?
If we all stopped using cars,
it doesn't matter. The sun is still going to. Trust me, everything we're doing here has no effect on the sun. The sun is by several orders of magnitude more important and powerful than the Earth. The Earth is just a satellite.
The sun's laughing at
us. Dead thing that goes around the sun. The sun will eventually absorb us into itself.
So what you're saying is what we do know for certain. Laugh.
She loves that. She likes it. So we know that this
so
eventually.
Glad I'm not going to be here.
Eventually this is going to happen. But of course, another thing that could happen is that our galaxy and the Andromeda galaxy will smash into each other.
And then?
And obliterate.
Okay, goodbye. You
know. I thought there would be a better option here. Where was the good news?
No, there's no good news. There is no survival case for Earth. Long term.
What, that galaxy, Big Bang?
Andromeda.
When would that happen?
No, these two galaxies they will cross each other and several stars and planets will be obliterated. Because, you know, their orbits will intersect and the gravity of this sun will pull other stars towards or away, and you know how these things
will happen. More than a big bang.
Well, it'll be like if you. What's the best explanation for this? You know, if you have two water flows and they're flowing into each other, and then there's turbulence.
Yes,
that's kind of on a micro level. You're going to have these atoms bumping into each other. You're going to have
like confetti at a wedding.
No, it's going to be a little more
it's
violent.
Not that festive.
It's going to be quite a lot of violence, quite a lot of heat. It's going to get very ugly.
A water slide?
Yeah, so it depends whether the Andromeda galaxy collides with ours or if the sun eventually just turns into a red giant and subsumes us. Either way, that's the future you've got. When people say you could predict the future, that's the only future that matters.
So even if we were to somehow find the fountain of youth and we'd be able to live forever.
Yeah. You would not be able to live forever on Earth. I mean, there's always the possibility that we could go to another planet or we could live on a space station and move away if the sun gets too hot. But the Earth itself, I mean, there's no way to pull the Earth into a further orbit. And oh, by the way, the moon, just to make this a little bit
worse. The moon also hates us.
The moon is going to probably smash. It's going to dissociate.
Disintegrate.
Yeah, disintegrate and form like a. Almost like a ring around the Earth eventually, and that'll fuck up the oceans and tides and.
Excuse me, while I just go to the roof.
So, if you're wondering, no, sir, I think it's very exciting. This is very cool.
Please do tell me what's exciting about this.
Everything I do now just seems so insignificant.
That's right. So just deal with it. It's okay. It's okay.
Okay.
And by the way, the outer core might actually solidify as well, which will ruin all the magnetism, which will also mess
crispy.
With
it. Yeah. Crispy bits.
That's
one big rice crispy. Yeah.
So not great in terms of total prognosis.
No,
over 7
delightful
million
thought to have.
I feel like I've just got bad news from the doctor.
So if there's ever a reason to live in the moment, it's that. Isn't that great? I thought I'd help you this morning. All right, let's get into some other stories. I was very excited to tell you about this.
Thank you.
All right. There are a whole bunch of Russian islands that have declared an emergency after a mass invasion of polar bears. I love this. The polar bears are coming back to claim their territory.
Well, because of global warming, which I thought my story was going to be quite big. All about global warming and stuff.
No, it's nothing compared to the sun.
You know.
Sun eating us up. But what did these polar bears want? Because they'll also be gone.
They want territory and they want food. They're hungry. So the group of islands is called Novaya Zemlya.
Yeah, that's where they did all those nuclear tests there.
Yes, and they're near the Arctic.
Yes, Novaya Zemlya.
Novaya Zemlya.
Yes, very nice.
Very similar to other islands.
I feel romantic. Take you to Novaya Zemlya. You get radiation poisoning, get eaten by polar bear. Very nice.
So, it's affecting a population of about 3,000 people. They're being besieged by these hungry bears.
Good. I hope they eat every
They're
single person.
They're chasing people to eat them.
Yes, good.
No one's going, leaving their home. No one's going to school.
People are being, this
being
is great.
Eaten
I love
by
this.
Bears. They're walking up and down the passages of apartments.
I
love
think
this.
This is the end of the world. This is how it's all starting.
So it's just, they're walking around eating people.
Yes.
I love it.
People are in their cars and hooting wonderful. And they've set out the dogs. They've been shooting bullets into the air. Nothing's happening. And Russia classes polar bears as an endangered species. So shooting them is prohibited by law.
Yeah.
Officials warn, however, that a cull may be necessary to ensure the safety of the local population.
No.
You see.
Please don't do that.
We've taken their ice and now we're going to kill them.
I want these bears to. Seriously, can they just please, can the bears eat the people?
And I mean, the polar bear is literally the symbol of global warming.
Yeah, it is. They're getting their own back. I mean, this is a victory for animal kind. Imagine them walking up the corridor of your apartment building, hungry to eat.
What was that? I watched a series recently with ships, and it was a big polar bear that would eat people.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, it just all came back to me, but I don't have the facts. Just a feeling. Okay, so more about global warming.
Yeah?
Is that roughly 40% of the world's insect species are in decline.
Oh, it's not in my house.
It's a new study, and people are shocked because insects are facing, in fact, they're saying it's an ominous sign that we're in the middle of a sixth mass extinction.
Okay. If the insects are going extinct, I'm up for this one. This is going to be my favorite extinction.
Yeah, but if there are no insects, then there's no pollinization. Pollination.
Not all animals get to live. I'm sorry. You know, 99% of all the species that have ever existed on Earth are already gone.
Yay.
And there are new ones that are being formed all the time. There are new ones being discovered all the time. And obviously, some animals will survive and others will not.
If this trend continues, the Earth may not have any insects at all by 2119.
2119.
Listen carefully. 2119.
That's only 100 years.
Yeah. It would collapse Earth's ecosystems.
I don't think that's possible. Insects are everywhere and their populations are enormous.
Yeah, but so
I have mosquitoes. There are the male ones, the ones that don't bite you.
The big ones.
No, well, they I switch on a light outside.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Do they gather in swarms? I see flying ants. I see ants. I see bees, butterflies. There's no chance these things are going extinct. And who's killing them?
We are with our poisons.
What? Is this global
and
warming?
And urbanization.
Is this global warming? Insects
no, pesticides. Fertilizers are also to blame.
But you can't buy DDT anymore. Trust me, I've tried.
Oh, you can't?
What's DDT?
It's what they use to wipe out insects.
Oh, gosh.
Why? Is it too harsh?
Yeah, it's been banned by most governments. I don't know about this, Leanne. This sounds like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez saying, in 12 years, we'll all be dead because of global warming and environment and
study. It's a first for the study, and that's why everyone's so shocked, because they haven't done a global study like this before.
Well, as long as humans go with the insects, then I'm okay with it.
With you this morning.
No, because humans, look at what we do. Look at how we ruin everything around us. We can't even make peace in the Middle East. What chance do we have? And now we're going to take the insects, make them miserable too? No.
Don't you have a little hope?
Well, something will survive. There'll be a kind of person who will, there'll be the right mutation that will survive.
And you think that's the person deserving to survive?
Evolution will select. It's not up to me.
Well, I'll tell you what's definitely surviving are bed bugs.
Yes. Now, those are insects. They're not going anywhere.
Really? Yes. Of all things?
A courthouse in Oklahoma was shut down.
Oh, my God.
After a lawyer walked in and he was swarming with bed bugs.
Oh, my God.
He was covered in so many of these parasites that they were falling from his clothing.
No, they are not. No!
As Gareth shows us this nice screen of bed bugs.
Yeah. I didn't know that they were big enough for you to see.
Yeah, no, they are.
I've never seen a bed bug.
He was he's like a walking parasitic infestation.
And they shut down the courthouse?
The Rogers County Courthouse, yes. It was evacuated after this attorney arrived with an abundance of bed bugs crawling on him.
Oh, holy hell.
As he was walking around, they were just dropping off. He took his jacket off at one stage and put it on top of some file folders. And when he moved his jacket, all the bed bugs were crawling around. A courthouse user noticed them and said she could visibly see something crawling on his neck.
Oh!
Which was later found out to be bed bugs.
Meanwhile, the client of this lawyer is saying, but he's a great lawyer.
And apparently he wasn't aware of them at all.
Jesus. That's revolting.
You know, I mean, it's hard to imagine not knowing that these things are crawling all over you. And so many of them.
Yeah, I can feel when, you know, if a hair falls off my head and lands on my nose, I can feel it.
Yeah.
If there were creatures crawling on me, I would know. This guy must be really bizarre.
So the security guard at the courthouse said, we've evacuated for fire alarms and bomb threats, but never for bed bugs. They had to call in exterminators to come in and give it a big sweep over.
Just to go back to your story about the insects, I got an email from Carl. He says, hey, Gareth, you remember traveling as a kid? The windscreen was always full of insects. Now you travel from Joburg to KZN and there's nothing. It's real, man. Maybe you got a point. I do remember, there were tons of insects on the windscreen.
Yeah, there were.
That I remember.
This report puts together 73 historical reports on insect declines around the world.
Yeah.
And so the total mass of all insects on the planet is decreasing by 2.5% per year.
Okay, so we're all right.
Yeah.
I think we could do with less insects, but maybe I'm being very stupid here. Maybe one day I'll regret.
You know, I mean, they're also a food source for birds and fish and mammals.
Yeah.
And then you get the pollinators.
Yeah, okay, all right.
Pollinization.
All right, you've convinced me. I'm an idiot. I should shut up and learn.
Well, you know, you may be right.
Don't think so.
But you do seem to know the world's ultimate demise. Yeah. So.
Yeah, none of this is going to matter, by the way. You get yourself all upset about it. You know, people worry about, who's going to win the 2020 American election?
Yeah, or the Super Bowl.
Are the ANC going to lose support in this year's election? Who cares if the sun's going to absorb us one day?
This has been a morning of riveting and uplifting conversation.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that we'll just all die.
It's a little nihilistic.
None of this matters.
It's a little nihilistic. It's It's good.
Well, it's reality. I mean,
yeah.
Well, tell Jeff Bezos that.
Oh, shame. He is in some trouble.
He's going through a lot.
Yeah, but he's decided to fight the National Enquirer, which is very ballsy. But I mean, it's stupider than National Enquirer to look for trouble with a guy who's got $160 billion, right?
Yeah.
He can do you some damage. So what I understand up to now, and Sia, you can correct me wherever I'm wrong here. So he had this affair, and he was sending these text messages to his lover. He's still married, and his wife and he are getting divorced because obviously it's too much for her to bear. But it seems amicable. They've figured it out, and it's always much easier to divorce someone if you get $60-odd billion as your part of the deal. That, to me, would seem like a pretty good payday. They've got kids, but yes. Jeff Bezos is slightly embarrassed by all of this because, you know, his whole story is being put out there on social media, and people are sharing their own thoughts on his life, and it must be humiliating. But the National Enquirer, which seems to have it in for Jeff Bezos, they were trying to blackmail him. They said to him, if you pay us X amount of money, we won't publish your dick pics.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, you know what? You guys go ahead and publish my dick pics.
I'm 90 years old. What do I care?
He's not 90. Jeff Bezos. You're thinking of George Bezos, the lawyer.
Oh, sorry.
If we had to see his dick, it would be
You don't want to see that. Guys, the visuals face palm. On the show this morning.
So no, Jeff Bezos is Amazon, right?
Right.
The billionaire, Leanne.
Thank you.
So the National Enquirer tried to blackmail him, and he did what we should all do. If you ever get blackmailed, call their bluff. Because so what? The truth's going to come out anyway. Don't let them extort money from you. And he stood up for himself, and he said, you know what, you guys? Middle finger. And he's basically got investigators now.
Yeah, because he has the money and the resources.
And he said to them, you have an unlimited budget to these investigators. Unlimited budget to go and dig deep into American Media, which is the company that owns the National Enquirer. Find out what exactly is going on there.
Yeah, they're panicking because they don't have a hold over him. So the National Enquirer is now saying, no, stop the investigations. Yeah. Otherwise, we're going to probe even further.
Oh, well, we'll probe too, says Bezos. And you know what? With all this probing going on, we'll find out how the American media system really works. And by the American media system, I don't mean that company, but I mean all of these people who get, you know, they get bust in the tabloids for having an affair, or someone's dick pic leaks online, or someone is outed for some relationship they had when they were 23 and now they're 40-something. You know what? Good.
Is this even allowed, though?
What? What part of it?
You are consciously saying that you're going to expose someone's private photos.
No, it's completely legal. And he'll sue them afterwards. They're in shit anyway. I hope he takes them down like Hulk Hogan took down Gawker.
Tweet on February 8th, he said, I've written a post about developments with the National Enquirer and its parent company, AMI. You can find it here. And it's entitled, No Thank You, Mr. Pecker, by Jeff Bezos.
Mm-hmm. And the guy at the American media at AMI, his name is Mr. Pecker. How funny is that?
I know.
How funny is that, that's his name and this is all about dick pic? It's hilarious, right? Couldn't have written a better story.
Yeah, it makes them really, really tacky. Oh, as if they weren't tacky to begin with.
By the way, part of what makes this even more saucy, turns out that the person who leaked the dick pics, it wasn't some, you know, NSA sleuth who was using government information to tap into a phone or some high-tech hacking system or anything. It was the lover, Sanchez, whatever first name.
Lauren
Sanchez, the TV personality, her brother.
So Michael Sanchez is seen as the main culprit in all of this.
What a douche, by the way. Your sister's having an affair with someone. She's sensible enough to keep it quiet. He's the richest man in the world. And you, what, you get into her phone?
Yeah, what was his point?
What a scumbag.
As a source from this investigation says it isn't Michael. So that's just on one source saying that it wasn't Michael. He would never do that. But it's clear from this investigation that Lauren has been sending messages and photos to a bunch of her friends.
Oh, shit. So so she's not so smart then.
Far from smart.
Oh, boy.
Because it's not, you aren't just having an affair in general. You're having an affair with like the richest man on earth.
You moron.
But I get it on a very simple level. I'd also want to show my friend, like, you'll never believe what I got today. You want to screenshot, you want to laugh with your friends, you want to put it in the group, you want to analyze it.
You don't need to do this. Just by the way, if you're in a relationship, whether it's a quiet, secret relationship with someone because they're married.
Or you work with them.
Or you work with them. Or you're in a relationship that everybody knows about. Guess what? That stuff that you guys talk about is nobody else's business. Keep it to your goddamn self.
Don't you do that?
What?
Like, don't you share things with your friends that you are?
Hell no.
This is the condition when someone says,
I love
to
my
me,
friends and I have really have happy relationships. I don't need to tell my friends what's going on in my relationship. And I don't, if they ask and I feel like telling them, sure. But I'm not volunteering. I'm not sending private messages between me and whoever I'm involved with to my friends. Who does that? You do that?
If you tell me
wrong with you?
Not to tell anyone, there should be an comma and the rest of the sentences. I won't tell anyone except some of my sisters and some of my friends.
No. No, you have to shut down like a moat and a drawbridge.
My worst fear is if I were to ever land up in some sort of legal trouble and I have to hand over.
You're Lauren Sanchez.
Yes.
Right, you're having an affair with the richest man in the world. He's this brilliant guy. He runs Amazon. You know he's got a family.
Mm-hmm.
You can Google that. You know he's got a family. He's got four kids. He's saying, hey, Lauren, listen, let's keep this on the DL, honey. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be good for both of us. We're both having a lot of fun. He's sending you little messages. Hey, I really thought about you a lot today. Let's get together later on. I'll pick you up for dinner.
Ugh.
She's got to make sure Mackenzie and the kids are out of town or whatever.
Yes.
And she's like, okay, I love that. Oh, Jeff, you're so romantic. And he goes, yeah. And by the way, I'm going to send you a little pic just now. Me so horny.
Mm-mm.
Okay, you might not like it, but maybe she was like, oh, yes, Jeff, I definitely need to see that Amazon dick.
Oh.
And then Jeff goes click, click, and he takes a picture and he sends it to her. I mean, this is the most powerful man in the world. It just shows you no one is above this. Okay.
She replied to one of his photos because he's put the list up of the photographs descriptions.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So what does he just,
he himself.
Go on. Let's hear.
Does
he talk about how
these include? Is the letter from the guys at AMI.
All right.
Well, to be precise, Dylan Howard.
So this is the guy who's basically sent the email to him to say, if you're not prepared to pay us off, we're going to publish this.
Yeah.
Which is disgusting.
Yeah.
And I'm so proud of Jeff Bezos for saying, fuck you.
I wanted to describe to you the photos obtained during our news gathering. In addition to the below-the-belt selfie, otherwise colloquially known as a dick pic, the Inquirer obtained a further 9 images. This is still the letter.
All right,
These include Mr. Bezos's face selfie at what appears to be a business meeting.
Yes. Okay,
Ms. Sanchez's.
So he's sitting in a business meeting. You will think that this is the guy who built the most successful company in the world. He's got to be super serious in a business meeting. Meanwhile, he's sending a selfie to his girlfriend. I love this.
He's so whipped.
It's so great.
Ms. Sanchez's response, a photograph of her smoking a cigar in what appears to be a simulated oral sex scene.
Ooh. Oh, yes. That's excellent. All right.
A shirtless Mr. Bezos holding his phone in his left hand while wearing his wedding ring. He's wearing either tight black cargo pants or shorts, and his semi-erect manhood is penetrating the zipper of said garment.
What else?
Next, a full-length body selfie of Mr. Bezos wearing just a pair of tight black boxer briefs or trunks with his phone in his left hand while wearing his wedding ring. A selfie of Mr. Bezos fully clothed.
Oh.
Anticlimactic.
A full-length scantily clad body shot with short trunks.
Oh.
A naked selfie in a bathroom. While wearing his wedding ring, Mr. Bezos is wearing nothing but a white towel and the top of his pubic region can be seen.
Beautiful. Well done, Jeff. That's very sexy. Nice.
That is that Amazon bush.
Nice job, Jeff. Yeah, all right.
Miss Sanchez replies with two messages.
Yeah.
One of her wearing a plunging red necklined dress,
yes,
revealing her cleavage and a glimpse of her nether region.
Oh, excellent.
And then also wearing a two-piece red bikini with gold detail, revealing her cleavage.
That sounds great.
He then writes after the sign off.
Aren't you sort of upset you're not involved in this conversation in some way? It must have been exciting for the two of them. Imagine.
Well, now we are, because all of this is going to get leaked in a couple of days.
But imagine how exciting this is for the two of them. They're like playing with each other. It's courtship. It's that rush of adrenaline. You're like, ooh, what's her name? Sanchez. Lauren. She just sent me a picture. I'm in this meeting. I have to wait till after the meeting.
I don't know. I've been there and done that. All of it.
Oh, well, I'm sorry, miss. I've done all of it before.
And
you have lived.
You're asking me if I'm excited about it. No, no, because I've done it before.
Okay. I don't know. It sounds
And it actually leads to so much shit.
Well, clearly.
In what way?
Clearly. I think if Jeff...
Divorces. Messy divorces.
If Jeff could rewind, he would not be doing this.
No.
But
he says after the letter, well, that got my attention. But not in the way that they likely hoped. Any personal embarrassment AMI could cause me takes a back seat because there's a much more important matter involved here. If in my position I can't stand up to this kind of extortion, how many people can?
That's a good point. Mm-hmm. See, he's got the $160 billion to throw into an investigation and to out these guys for being the scurrilous, disgraceful animals that they are. They are. They're just animals.
Yeah.
You don't. Even if people are doing this stuff and you disapprove of people sending each other naked selfies, and let's say you disapprove of adultery, you disapprove of a guy cheating on his wife, all right? All of that's perfectly okay, but you do not have the right to put their pictures online.
Yeah.
In South African law, you are held jointly and severally liable. If Sia mistakenly sends Leanne a compromising picture, and she forwards that to someone else, like what happened to Malusi Gigaba, you can be sued for that.
Mm.
You can be held responsible for that. You can even, if the current proposals in legislation go ahead, you could even be criminally liable for it.
Yep.
So it's not on that this supposed media house, which should have ethics and a standard of press behavior, you know, these are our journalistic ethics. They should say, we do not publish people's dick pics after we've tried to extort money from them. And they said no. Outrageous. Doesn't matter how this ends, it's going to end a lot worse for the National Enquirer than it will for Jeff Bezos.
So quite seriously, though, yes, it's all fun to talk about it and it's saucy, but if you are behind this at the National Enquirer, why?
Well,
and what do you get out of it? Because, okay, we now know Lauren and Jeff have been seeing each other for a while. Aren't you now just going for...
Hang on, we've got a reporter.
Blood.
We've got a reporter from the...
Oh, yes?
Yeah, the National Enquirer on the line. Yes, ma'am, go ahead.
Hi.
Yes, what is it you want to know?
Are you stroking your cock?
I'm sorry?
Are you thick like a can of soup?
Excuse me, ma'am. How old are you, and how can you ask me these questions?
I'm wearing an Eagle J.
Oh, all right. Okay. Listen, we got to go, ma'am.
Barbara Bush.
No, please. It's enough. Thank you.
Am I making you hot?
No. You can get out of here. Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Oh, I'm glad.
I thought I'd cut you off.
Yeah, we need to. Need a bit of more
control
works, on that phone line.
Definitely works for the Enquirer.
Jeff signs off on this article and he says, I preferred. He said, of course, I don't want personal photos published, but I also won't participate in their well-known practice of blackmail, political favors, political attacks, and corruption.
Yeah.
I prefer to stand up, roll this log over, and see what crawls out.
Good for you.
Yeah.
The point is just, I like his fearlessness. And of course, it helps if you're backed up by a huge bank balance. But good for Jeff Bezos.
But this is an attitude that he has, which is admirable.
And you know what? If anyone ever tries to extort you, you don't have to be a billionaire to stand up to them. Just say no. whatever embarrassment might come afterwards, it would be better than letting someone extort you and living with that shame.
Mm.
Good for Jeff Bezos. Like it very much.
Hmm.
He's not just the richest man in the world. He's also got the biggest pair of balls.
Well, as per the pictures.
No, I'm saying this as a figurative seer.
Sorry. Lost you there.
All right. Well, good for him.
I am still just saying, though, that if you send me something, know that it's at least going to three other people.
All right. Now, we're going to launch our first episode of Blind History in a moment, but apparently Benjamin Franklin had a daily schedule which we can all learn from that was all about productivity. Benjamin Franklin, one of the founders of the United States of America, he was one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence, the signatories to the Declaration of Independence. He was an inventor. He was a real Renaissance man, a polymath, and someone who I think a lot of people would look up to. So what did Ben Franklin do, Leanne?
So this, even though it was created 300 years ago, contains timeless principles. The way he structures everything that he does is based on 13 principles, or like virtues or values.
Oh, did he also do that because there were 13 states in the original United States?
Possibly. So everything that he does, he goes through this list and says, am I standing up to each of these? Mm-hmm. And he's listed them in order of importance as well.
All right.
So just to give you an idea of some of them, number one, temperance. Eat not to dullness and drink not to elevation.
Okay. So balance.
Yeah. Silence. Speak not but what may benefit others or yourself. Avoid trifling conversation.
Okay. So don't talk. Don't be gossipy.
Speak when it's important. Yeah. When you've got something to say.
No, don't talk a whole lot of shit. Okay, good.
Number three, order. Let all your things have their places.
I love that.
Let each part of your business have its time.
All right, I'm taking notes. Order. I like that. Next one.
Resolution. Resolve to perform what you ought. Perform without fail what you resolve.
Say what you do. Do what you say.
Right.
Right.
Frugality. Make no expense, but to do good to others or yourself. I.e. waste nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Industry, lose no time. Be always employed in something useful. Cut off all unnecessary actions.
Right, okay.
Sincerity, use no hurtful deceit. Think innocently and justly. And if you speak, speak accordingly.
Hmm.
Justice, wrong none by doing injuries or omitting the benefits that are your duty.
Who was the wrong nun? What was her name? Sister Inviolata.
Yes, it was Sister Mary was the one, but that was the wrong one.
The wrong nun. Sorry, do that one again. Wrong nun.
Wrong nun by doing...
It sounds silly now. Start again.
Okay, well, justice.
Let's be adult. Go.
Okay, justice. Wrong nun.
now we've made it stupid.
Okay, number nine, moderation. Avoid extremes. Forbear...
No, go back to it. I'm ready to listen. All right, go on.
Okay,
when
justice.
The student is ready, the teacher will come.
Yeah. Wrong nun. Sister Mary. And, okay, I'm
yes,
closing this
yes,
off.
Yes, no, wrong nun.
She's the right nun. You're the wrong nun. Cleanliness, chastity, tranquility, and humility.
Wow, that's a lot to throw in at the end. I mean, tranquility is a big deal. And humility is a big deal.
No, they're each their own points. I just went through them quickly.
Oh, I thought you were throwing.
I didn't want a wrong nun situation again.
So go back to eight.
Eight's justice. Wrong nun.
Yes, carry on. Wrong nun.
No, I'm not.
Oh.
I refuse. So...
Sorry, I'll try to be adult.
So he asks himself a question in the mornings. Is this the right nun or the wrong nun? No, he asks, what good shall I do this day? At 5 o'clock, rise, wash, and address powerful goodness. I'm not sure what that is.
Mm-hmm. No, me too.
Contrive day's businesses and take the resolution of the day. Prosecute the present study.
Jesus.
And breakfast. That's all from 5 to 7.
Prosecute the present study and then and breakfast. So it's kind of silly.
From 8 to 11, work.
Right.
12 to 1, read or overlook my accounts and dine.
Oh.
Oh, make time to dine.
From 2 to 5, work. From 6 to 9, put things in their places. Supper, music or diversion or conversation and examination of the day.
Oh.
And from 10 until 4 in the morning, sleep. Oh, and he has an evening question. What good have I done today?
Oh, I like that. I do that. I often ask myself, is there something I'm really grateful about today?
Oh, look at you.
It's a very Oprah thing, but it's something I do. All right, I try to remember it every
good.
Day. All right. It is time for the first in our series of Blind History, which is brought to you by Taylor Blinds. You get it, blind.
Got it. See what you did there?
All right. So let me explain. The CEO of Taylor Blinds, Anthony Medera, is a huge history fan like me. And we got together in a meeting one day and we were trying to figure out something we could do together. And we just didn't talk about business at all. We started talking about history. And I said to him, you know what? This could make an interesting podcast. Let's try it.
I think it's great.
So I don't know if it's going to work. I don't know if you're going to love it. I think I've enjoyed it more than producing almost any of the series that I've been personally involved in producing for a long time. And it's so much fun because we get to explore the great, and by great, I don't always mean good, men and women of history. Obviously, history is slightly biased towards the masculine because men have written history, men go to war. Most of human history is a history of war, really. And as a result, it's skewed. But these are the people who have made the world around us. These are the people who have affected changes in the story of humanity that we still carry today. And for the next 15 minutes or so, you get to hear some interesting things about Alexander the Great, who lived in around the 300s BC. And I thought this might be something that you could get into. So you decide if you're going to listen to the rest of these episodes and maybe just advance and extrapolate your interest in history. It's certainly something that I hope will happen after this. And we'll see if you've got any tips, if you've got any ideas, if you've got any people you want us to cover in future episodes, then you can email us, gareth@cliffcentral.com. But take a listen to the first in our series on blind history. Brought to you by Taylor Blinds. And this is CliffCentral.com. The 12th of February, just before 8 o'clock. A young blonde man wearing white robes and golden armor charges on a pitch black horse directly at the assembled Persian chariots and cavalry. He's in his 20s. By the age of 30, he will have conquered the known world. He will have been worshipped as a god and founded an empire and a culture that will have a lasting effect on civilization for 2,300 years. The dust of the plain of Gaugamela fills the air. It is 331 BC. Alexander III of Macedon is about to become Alexander the Great. This is Blind History. Brought to you by Taylor Blinds. This is the first in a series of history podcasts that I've been very excited to do for a long, long time. It's about important and significant people in history, and I've managed to find someone who is as passionate about history as I am. Anthony Medera is here. He happens to be the CEO of Taylor Blinds, and he's been a podcast listener for a long time. He reads voraciously about history. So the two of us hope to, through the course of a few episodes of this podcast series, tell you about some of our favorite people in history. Some of them are our favorites because they were really good people. Some of them are our favorites because they were fascinating and evil. But by the end of this, we'll hopefully all have a better idea of how human nature works. It's going to be exciting.
I'm looking forward to it. Excellent.
So we decided to put together just a very concise list of who exactly we want to focus on. And we're going to start with Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great was probably one of the most decisive figures in all of human history. He's in every list of important people that have lived and died. His influence extends to the very present era. You could say that Hellenistic civilization and subsequent to that Western civilization was founded by him. His conquests throughout Asia have resulted in people who were discovered as late as the 1920s speaking Greek in far-flung provinces of Afghanistan. And he died in the year 323 BC. So that's some influence to go from 323 BC till 1920.
If you look at what his father did for him.
Yeah, Philip of Macedon.
I think Philip II. His father had similar characteristics. There was a big dream of his, burning ambition to actually go east, actually Philip II. And that was his son. Although I'm not sure the relationship was great.
I don't think any normal father-son relationships existed in that violent part of our history.
That's exactly.
But his father had one eye. His father was also a big warrior and managed to conquer a large portion of northern Greece. He also managed to subdue some of the Spartan and Greek kings to his will. But he was assassinated, and Alexander took over as king when his father had been assassinated. He wasn't always popular at court. His mother was not his father's favorite wife, Olympia. She was actually exiled for a while. But I found out something interesting about Alexander that I'd forgotten. He was tutored by Aristotle.
Mm.
So he actually had Aristotle
as his tutor, correct?
I mean, that's got to count for something.
And Gareth, you know, just to jump in quickly, what's incredible about what I really like about him, he's just not just a warrior king. I mean, the philosophy, what he learned from Aristotle, he was able to treat his troops, the injured troops and that were lying in the battlefield. Mm-hmm. And he actually did that, especially early on. So philosophy, medicine, he was very interested in all different parts, very well educated. So that was exciting. Just a brief story on Olympia, his mom. Philip was convinced she was a witch of sort. I'm not sure what they called them in those days, yeah. But the one evening he came in and she was sleeping with a snake. And so he said, no, look, I need to do my duty here, procreate, and then I'm out of here. It was almost like that type of
scenario. Well, she used to say, Olympia used to tell everybody who wanted to know that Philip wasn't really Alexander's father and that she was actually impregnated by Zeus and that he was a son of Zeus. I mean, people could tell those stories, and if you're a queen, they weren't going to disagree with you on pain of death. But Alexander's called Alexander the Great, and there are not a lot of people in history who get the epithet of the Great. In Greek, they say Alexandros Megalos, and he was undefeated in battle, which is one of the reasons he was the Great. He founded 20 cities that bear his name to this day. He conquered the known world before he'd even turned 30, and he created a system of cultural diffusion and what they call syncretism, where basically he took a whole lot of cultures, and this was unheard of in those days because people were very tribal. He took all of these cultures and amalgamated them into his culture. He had troops that were Bactrian. He had troops that were Persian. He had troops that were Indian. He had troops that spoke Egyptian. And all of that he put together into his army, into his force. And they marched across all the way from the Peloponnese, right the way through Asia Minor, into the deserts of what is modern-day Iran, and through all the way to the Indus Valley, where eventually they turned around and went back via Babylon, and he died. But an incredible life. I mean, if anyone deserved the name The Great, it's got to be this guy. He conquered Persia and defeated Darius III as emperor of Persia in two major battles, and this is where his reputation as a soldier really comes from, the Battle of Issus and the Battle of Gaugamela. And at Issus and Gaugamela, he had some very interesting military tactics that hadn't been tried at the time. I mean, at Issus, he developed the phalanx, and he had these Greek infantrymen with very, very long spears that they would lay over each other and form like an impenetrable wall against anything, cavalry, infantry, chariots. At Gaugamela, he actually attached scythes, you know, like the Angel of Death carries, or that you would use to shear corn that the Soviets eventually put on their flag. He attached scythes to the wheels of his chariots to chop away the legs of the infantrymen and the cavalry of the Persians and all the rest of it. So it was an incredible sense of military tactics, which hadn't really at that stage been developed at that scale.
Yeah, and very strategic.
Hugely. Hugely. And there's a beautiful story about how once he had defeated Darius III, who fled and eventually died, I think he was murdered by one of his generals, Alexander found the body and had him buried in full pomp right near his ancestor Cyrus the Great, whose tomb he also refurbished. So he had a kind of begrudging respect for the nations that he conquered and absorbed them into his empire rather than conquering them and stamping them out of existence.
But that almost was also his downfall. But because of the power of his character, he managed to keep his army and everybody with him. But because the Macedonians were very much against the integration of all the different cultures that he managed to conquer. But demonstrating his character, and it's it does waver a bit, you know, if you looked, I think the Macedonian kings of the time drank hard, fought hard, rode horses, loved horses. But when Darius III actually, as you said earlier, ran away, he literally ran away and left his family behind, his wife and his children. Alexander looked after them like the royalties that they were. And to such an extent that Darius's mother, I stand to be corrected, it could be the mother or the wife, adopted Alexander at that specific time, at the first battle. I think it's a battle of Issus.
Yeah.
So those type of things demonstrate his type of, you know, what type of character he was. And there was a fairness to him. Obviously, he was brutal. That island that they had in the Mediterranean where they resisted him for nearly a year, he absolutely decimated it afterwards. And the rest he took into slavery. Getting back to Aristotle just briefly, because I just remembered that, he hung with some serious people. If you look at Ptolemy, that was Cleopatra's
ancestor.
And he went, obviously, at the end with the disastrous split up of his empire because there was no heirs, he went down to Egypt and actually took Alexander's body.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get to that by the end of the story. But I think the major events of his life, I mean, we talked about the conquest of Persia and these battles of Issus and Gaugamela. He eventually reached the Persian capital of Persepolis, which was this amazing, beautiful. They had these halls called apadanas with these columns that were meters and meters high. I think something 20 meters high, the ceiling of the main apadana, which you could still see the ruins of now. But the reason it isn't a thriving city and hasn't been built on by cities that came afterwards was because Alexander's troops, it's believed, either on purpose or by mistake, set fire to the place when they eventually were camping there one night. And they burnt the whole place to the ground. And you can still see blackened, charred wood from the 300s BC in that part of Persia. It's now in Iran. It's in the mountains of Iran. But it's a national monument now. And the fact that happened did some damage to his reputation as well.
It actually did. And I think historians are quite split on the reasons behind it.
He obviously had many relationships too. I mean, first of all, we've got to say he did a couple of things that were outside of the norm. You mentioned Macedonians, there was hard drinking. He did that. He was a massive drinker. In fact, I think towards the end of his life, there were about 4 days where he was just drunk for a successive 4 days and just kept drinking and eventually fell down. And that's when he started getting sick. I mean, he was only in his 30s, but hard drinking, hard fighting. I mean, they would fight to the death. And it was a Macedonian thing to just never give up and to take on your enemy. And if you fell, then fall fighting. But he also did something that they didn't do. Because he wasn't a very dark man like the rest of the Macedonians, he was blonde. He also chose to shave. So he was the only clean-shaven guy in his army. Everyone else had beards. And this became a bit of a thing because now you see everywhere that you see his head portrayed in armor and in sculpture and in ancient mosaics and so on. He's the only one without a beard in any of these pictures. So he sort of stands out. And I think that was part of his propaganda, is that he wanted to stand out. And all the first-hand sources that describe him are lost, but there are a couple of very good descriptions. There was one sculptor who he particularly liked the work of because he thought it looked the most like him. And he just absolutely banned anyone else from drawing, carving, or trying to create an impression of him in clay or anything else from that point on. He had a horse called Bucephalus.
Yes, that's an incredible story.
He had Bucephalus fight with him throughout the wars in Asia. And eventually, I think Bucephalus was killed at a battle of the Hydaspes.
And he named a town after Bucephalus.
That's right.
Yeah. Bucephalia, and I think it was.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And he, I think, eventually had Bucephalus buried in full ceremony as well, like a human.
But an incredible story about Bucephalus, and he was 12 years old. They were in the mountains in Macedonia, and they had this wild horse. His court, Philip's court, Alexander's dad, they were trying to tame this horse. And Alexander came along, and he actually asked, "Let me try." And he was the only one that tamed that wild, wild horse. You know, you don't hear of that in any of, not that I know of these greats that we talk about in history, of this relationship with something like a horse. Well, it's incredible.
Alexander was famous for his relationships. He did marry a Bactrian princess called Roxanne, who he had a child with. Became Alexander IV, a very short-lived Alexander IV.
Yeah, they killed him.
Yeah, and he also had relationships with men. His lover was Phaistion. all of his main friends from Macedonia were called companions, and they were at the forefront of all the armies, and they led the armies, and they took care of certain divisions. But Hephaestion was his lover, and the two of them went to visit the tomb of Achilles. And Achilles obviously had a lover too. They were both killed in the wars of Troy. But the fact that this actually creates this very strange and mysterious overlap between mythology, you know, in terms of the Trojan Wars and the stories that we're not sure are historically true, and this real history, which we know to be historically true about Alexander afterwards, are quite fascinating. And when Hephaestion died, that was really the end of Alexander. He went into decline and died shortly afterwards.
From a religious perspective, if we look at track his route, everywhere he went, or every day, I believe, that he had a sacrifice, or every town that was conquered. And he also went on, in brackets, a pilgrimage down between the border of Libya and Egypt. I can't quite recall the name of it, but Ammon, I think it could be.
The Temple of Ammon.
Yeah. So these things are very, very
important.
There's
an oasis.
But so there's a depth to this guy. You know, he's really, really serious depth. And there he was convinced, although he was very quiet, but I think there he was convinced that he was deity.
Yeah, he considered himself a god towards the end. And what was interesting about him from a religious point of view is he assimilated a lot of these religions into a new religion, which was really just him at the center and everything goes. So if you wanted to worship this god or this goddess, as long as you put Alexander somewhere there in that panoply of gods, you were okay. The other thing that I found interesting about him is this story about him and a guy called Diogenes. Diogenes was a philosopher, and he supposedly died on the same day that Alexander died. But I'm going to read from Plutarch here, because this is quite an interesting story. He said, "Thereupon many statesmen and philosophers came to Alexander with their congratulations and expected that Diogenes of Sinope would also do so, who was tarrying in Corinth, who would do likewise. But since that philosopher took not the slightest notice of Alexander and continued to enjoy his leisure in the suburb of Cranion, Alexander went in person to see him and found him lying in the sun. Diogenes raised himself up a little when he saw so many people coming towards him and fixed his eyes upon Alexander. And when the monarch addressed him with greetings and asked him if he wanted anything, Diogenes said, 'Yes, stand a little out of the sun.'" And it is said that Alexander was so struck by this and admired so much the haughtiness and grandeur of the man, who had nothing but scorn for him, that he said to his followers, who were laughing and jesting, "But truly, if I were not Alexander, I would be Diogenes." So he took pleasure in being mocked a little.
Yeah.
Obviously, he died in Babylon in 323 BC. Some people say he died from poison. There are varying stories about who might have been responsible for that, but he didn't leave a designated heir. And that created huge confusion. So the empire broke up after his death. But his body was taken by Ptolemy to Egypt, and it was supposedly buried in Alexandria. And we know that this is a historical fact because Augustus of Rome visited the body some 200
years. And even Julius
years.
Caesar did as well, yeah.
Absolutely, some 200 or 300 years later. And when Alexander was obviously, you know, this is now a 300-year-old corpse, but he'd been embalmed to some degree by the Egyptians. And Augustus went to kiss his cheek and broke off his nose. It's a famous story. Yeah. Alexander was such an inspiration to Augustus that for a while he actually changed his seal from the Sphinx to Alexander's face. But we know there was a body at some point. One of the greatest mysteries of the ancient world is what happened to the tomb of Alexander. And they've never found it. There must be something in Alexandria, which is still there.
Yeah.
And nobody's been able to.
It's amazing with the technology now.
Yeah, you would think. But if someone found the tomb of Alexander, it would be the greatest and most spectacular historical find, probably in the top 10 of all time.
It's phenomenal. And, you know, his life cut short.
Yeah.
You know, so it's cut short at 32, I think it was. He already was planning his next conquests, you know, at that time. You know, the whole of the Arabian Peninsula, those type of areas, going towards Carthage. Carthage was a big thing on his list. That's Northern Africa.
It's just the most incredible story. So if you feel that you've got to 30-odd years of age and you've done nothing yet, you're probably right. Compared to Alexander the Great, you really don't amount to much. I mean, this guy had done it all. And that's why he's called the Great. Thanks for listening to Blind History, brought to you by Taylor Blinds.
This is CliffCentral.com.